Campus 103.7 presents a collaboration between me, Patricia Salomone, and my friend Stephen Mangione, reviewing the book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth, by Stephen Mangione. In this review, another in the series A Book, A Thousand Stories, the author will take us along the Camino to Santiago de Compostela, telling of the human search for forgiveness, redemption, and love. In last week's episode, we learned how Greta, Maria's friend, who was to accompany her on the Camino, had a family emergency which caused her to give up the pilgrimage. Bravely, Maria decides to go ahead with her plan. And we find her now in Pamplona, about to begin her Camino into the unknown. On arrival at Pamplona, Maria goes for hotel accommodation. She needs a good sleep and is wary of starting off at an albergue. As all pilgrims do, she collects her pilgrim's passport from the Oficina de Peregrinos. Maria, as the author tells us, is a good-looking woman in her late 30s. She is tall and slim, with almost a girlish look. She is a passionate and exuberant person. She is about to begin an unusual adventure. Will the Camino heal her pain? Maria strolls along the old city centre of Pamplona, which had been a walled city, and cannot help comparing these walls to Valletta's magnificent bastions. Just like any visitor to Pamplona, she is curious about the tradition of the bull run in this unusual city. Inevitably, both the taxi driver and the waiter serving tapas in one of the countless bars and tapas places are very keen to give her some information. But surely Stephen can tell us about it.
As I said last week, the Bull Run, or Encierro as it is called in Spanish, takes place on 7 consecutive days, from the 6th to the 14th of July, during the Feast of San Fermín. 6 bullocks lead 6 wild bulls, and they are released at one end of the city center, and they run through the main street for nearly 900 meters, until they get to the Plaza de Toros, which is the bull ring. Wooden boarding is fixed on each side of the street to contain the bulls. Some 2,000 men dressed in white with a red scarf round their necks take part every year, and they run ahead of the bulls. The run lasts between 2 and 3 minutes. There are invariably a number of injuries due to runners being gored or trampled upon by the bulls or other runners, some of which are fatal. The facades of the buildings overlooking the route are bedecked with flowers, and the balconies are filled with the more cautious onlookers. Hemingway made the running of the bulls famous when he wrote about it in his book, The Sun Also Rises.
Bar in the city produced a plethora of different pinchos, all competing with one another to be voted the best. Maria is struck by the number of paper napkins at the foot of the bar.
It is said that the origin of tapas dates back to the 13th century. King Alfonso X was prescribed a large quantity of wine for an illness he was suffering from, and he ate small portions of food with it to diminish the effects of the alcohol. When he recovered, he decreed that all wine should be served with a small piece of food. Another theory is that small plates were placed over the wine glass to prevent flies from falling in. In Spanish, tapar means to cover, hence the name. Taverns then started to put a small piece of food on the plate. In most of Spain, tapas are served with each drink and are free. In Navarra and the Basque Country, there is a different version of tapas called pinchos, which is derived from the Basque word for spike, since pinchos are usually served on a piece of bread with a skewer or toothpick to hold it together. The popularity of a bar is often assessed by the number of toothpicks left on or at the foot of the bar counter. In some cases, it is the small paper napkins served with the pinchos that fulfill this role. Tapas are smaller, served on a plate and eaten with cutlery, while pinchos are normally served on bread and eaten using toothpicks in 1 or 2 bites.
early. On her first awakening in Pamplona, Maria sets out on her way to Puente de la Reina. She follows the yellow arrows, which indicate the way for the peregrinos. The scenery was lovely, with huge seas of corn rippling in a wave-like motion in the wind, alternating with whole fields of yellow rapeseed and the dark green of the trees. Above it all was a clear blue sky, which was set off by the few white clouds. She came across a few pilgrims along the way, and they exchanged greetings, wishing her buen camino. Hungry and out of breath, Maria sat at an open-air restaurant, and being of a jovial character, quickly became engrossed in conversation with a young Brazilian couple who confided that they were doing this in the hope of being blessed with a large family. Other pilgrims opened out about their lives, and Maria became aware of how all the usual social taboos and restrictions simply did not exist there. She also realized that resuming her walk after a meal required quite some effort, but she had no choice but to press on, and when she arrived at Puente de la Reina, she asked for a bed at the albergue. Sleeping quarters consisted of a crammed dormitory of 50 bunk beds in double bunk form. As for the bathroom facilities, they seemed far from adequate, a far cry from what she was used to when traveling. But this is what the Camino was all about. This, and the spontaneous friendships created, it suited her fine.
Camaraderie is one of the most important aspects of the Camino. It has never ceased to surprise me pleasantly how people coming from very different backgrounds, countries, and of very different ages gel together so quickly and easily. You could have someone telling you their sometimes very private life story within a short time of meeting them. There is a kinship and a sense of common purpose among pilgrims, and an informality and friendliness which one really finds in one's life back home.
Supper time brought more conviviality, with people hailing from a vast mixture of nations. The author writes, "There was a lively atmosphere at the table. All were in high spirits, talking animatedly about their experiences of the day and their plans for the morrow. After a few glasses of Rioja and a long day on the road, Maria was ready for bed. The following morning, Maria wished to take in more of the little town, so she started early to cross the bridge, Puente de la Reina, which a medieval queen had provided for the benefit of pilgrims. She also stopped to admire the 12th century portico and facade of Puente de la Reina's church, dedicated to Santiago Peregrino.
St. James, which is Santiago in Spanish, has two principal personae, the peaceful one of a pilgrim, Santiago Peregrino, and the very different one of Santiago Matamoros, St. James the Moor's Slayer. Since the discovery of his tomb coincided with the Spanish Reconquista, in people's minds he spearheaded the battle to drive the Moors out of Spain. He was reported to be riding a big white stallion at the Battle of Clavijo, decapitating the Moorish enemy. Doña Mayor, wife of King Sancho, had a bridge built across the River Arga, which flows through Puente la Reina, to facilitate the passage of pilgrims across the river. The town came to be known by the name of the bridge she built.
It is during this early phase of the Camino that Maria meets Silvia, an Italian pilgrim, with whom she finds much in common. Silvia too had recently come out of an acrimonious separation. She was walking the Camino to get to grips with the new realities in her life. Much though Silvia spoke about her personal life, giving details about her difficult separation and the burning issue of her son, Maria was still reluctant to open up about the circumstances of her mother's tragic death, although she was dying to confide in her new friend. They walked on through the day. The scenery was spectacular. Vast areas of cultivation alternated with densely forested areas, quaint little hilltop villages, and, in the distance, a vast range of mountains. This day, the walk took them to Estella, a vibrant town which they explored, finding out that the Church of San Pedro was where the kings of Navarre took their oaths of office. Maria pictured the procession of the king's court in all their finery, walking up the magnificent flight of steps leading to the church. Together, Maria and Silvia checked into the local albergue, and the following morning, they looked out for one another to start their day's walk together. As they walked, they passed the Benedictine monastery where, at the Fuente Iriache, they could help themselves to freely flowing red wine in their conch shells.
The conch shell is the symbol of St. James, and pilgrims were expected to carry a shell with them, both to show that they were pilgrims, but also because it could be used as a kind of goblet. At the Fuente de Irache, pilgrims can partake of free wine from a faucet, and using their shell as a goblet. The monastery of Irache is mentioned in the Liber Sancti Jacobi, which is the first guide of the Camino, written in the 12th century by a French monk, Aymeric Picot. Many pilgrims suffered from a scarcity of food and poor water quality, and wine therefore became a form of sustenance for all pilgrims.
They walked through a forest of pine and oak. It was shady and cool beneath the trees, and the ground was soft underfoot, with fallen leaves and pine needles, a welcome change from walking on asphalt. They sat together on the thick trunk of a large fallen tree. On resuming their walk, the path meandered among the tall trees and some light filtered through the dense foliage, producing a variegated effect. Through clearings in the forest, they could see a conical hill, and the village perched up high. It was the village of Villamayor de Monjardin. Here they stopped for lunch, to have their credential stamped. The two friends felt a certain closeness, perhaps created by the fact that they had gone through similar circumstances. They could identify with the pain and the uncertainty that each felt. It gave them a sense of companionship and a feeling of wanting to help each other, thereby helping themselves too. On and off, they met pilgrims that they had come across on the previous days. They met people, lost them, and then met them again. It was a bit like life, where one could be estranged or separated from certain friends for a time, only to meet them and get close to them once again later. In this respect, the Camino was a bit like life in microcosm. As Maria and Silvia had lingered during their lunch break that day, they realized that they had better phone and book sleeping quarters at a private albergue, as being rather late, they risked not finding a place for the night in the municipal or church-run albergues. Their arrival point for this day was the small town of Los Arcos. Here, after the usual formalities at the albergue and the stamping of the credencial, the two friends went for a walk around the town, stopping in front of the Church of Santa Maria in the Plaza Mayor.
Thank you.
A mass was just about to start. The organ was playing, and a small girl's choir was singing from the organ loft. The music was heavenly. The choir was singing in Latin rather than in Spanish, and some of the locals were joining in. Maria is finding some peace. The author tells us she felt a glow inside her, being in that beautiful church with that lovely music and with like-minded people gave her a sense of contentment and peace. It was her first Mass and Communion in some days, and it affected her deeply. With this uplifting music, we bring episode 3 to an end. Remember, each episode is repeated on Thursdays at 15 hours. We look forward to joining our listeners again next week on Monday at 18:30 hours to proceed together on the Camino to Santiago de Compostela as we read through Stephen Mangione's book, The Path to Redemption.